Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. You know, I thought getting older would take longer. Things go quickly in life. We have to make sure we make the most of each day and offer each day to the Lord as a sacrifice. I mean, he has sacrificed everything for us. We owe him everything. So let's be prayerful as we start our day. And let's make sure we, as we go to work, treat work as an act of worship to him and be completely reliant on him for everything. We have a great hour coming up. Dr. David Stevens is going to be with us from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, and then Pastor Scott Saltz from Presbyterian Church in Nashville is going to be with us as well. So that's going to be our next hour. Thank you so much for listening and being such faithful supporters of Faith Radio. We just love you, and we thank you so much for your faithful support and how much you encourage us and affirm us, and just the fact that you support us so generously makes such a huge difference. So I guess I never get tired of saying thank you. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, we're going to take a very short break, and then Dr. David Stevens is with us. I've got many questions for the good doctor. We'll be back in just a minute. It is 7 minutes after the hour. That music is the walk-up music for Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association joining us this morning. Hello, David.
Good morning. I'm glad I have my own personal music.
I know.
That's
you
great.
Do. I know. That's something to be proud of. All right. Yeah. I want to start off with a question just about common sense. Now, you went through medical school and the training, and it's important in life, if you're going to be successful, to have self-discipline, isn't it?
Absolutely. In medicine, I tell students that if you want to get to medical school, you stay in the library and study while everybody else goes to the ballgame.
But I was reading an article over the weekend by a Marine, and he was talking about the need to develop resilience and tenacity. And I love both of those words. But he said, if you can't get your discipline like I did in the military, you need to get it somewhere else. And he said, one of the things you need to do is discipline yourself to maintain a normal weight. Obesity is the second largest cause of premature death. And he said, discipline yourself to get regular exercise. You'll feel better and live longer. Now, as a doctor, that's just plain old common sense, isn't it?
It is. And you know, we have such an abundance of food and high-calorie food and things that tempt us. They're readily available, and they're advertised to us all day long. And so this is a huge problem in this country. We used to laugh when we came home from the mission field that missionaries would gain 20 pounds, and as soon as they got back, they lost 20 pounds because all the stuff wasn't available there, and you were just more active and ate better. And so this is a habit, and it's one you have to learn how to say no.
Mm-hmm. And as a doctor, I mean, when you're talking to patients, can you give them advice as simple as this? And how do they listen, and how do they heed this advice?
Well, it actually has a huge effect for a healthcare professional to tell someone they need to lose weight, mm-hmm. and then give them some plan and how to do it. It's not a matter just to say this is the step. And there's all kinds of good options out there. Weight Watchers is a good program, and there's commercial programs. There's just things you can do where you can stop sugar or limit it significantly and say no to desserts and other things. And then getting active. And it can be simple things like walking, you know, parking in the far end of the parking lot, mm-hmm. and walking into work, going up the steps. I always use the steps pretty much here at work. There's rare exceptions when I have guests, but we've got 3 flights from where I am right now up to my office, and I'll be taking them in just a few minutes. It's just building that in as a habit and then planning some exercise each day. And I do that even though I'm extremely busy, but it has to be a priority.
Yeah, and it's the little things that add up, isn't it?
It is. It's got to be a lifestyle, and it's not something you start and then stop. It's some habit that you change, that you continue to practice, and that makes a huge difference in the long run.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, with the weather being what it has been, we had record heat over the weekend, and we had in April 16 or 17 inches of snow mid-April. So we've had, here in the state of Minnesota, an unbelievable amount of ticks. And there was an article in the paper that two dogs and three healthy adults in one state park had 100 ticks on them in less than 24 hours.
Ticks are bad, and they carry all kinds of disease, Lyme disease, other disease. And you've got to be careful. If they drop out of trees as you're walking past or bushes or whatever, that's how they get on you. You think of them crawling up, but mainly they just drop on you. And we have a trail around our property here at the Christian Medical Dental Associations. And so there's just some habits you have to get into. First is wear insecticide if you're out there walking, which will keep them away. Second is to check yourself for ticks when you come in. And these things, you know, you can get bit, and if you find them right away and get them off, usually all right. But if they've been there for a while and swollen up, the chances of getting some sort of disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, just all sorts of tick-borne diseases goes up. And so, and you need to, if they're on there, make sure to get the head off and not pull the body off and leave the head on. That can cause an infection. So it's a matter of being careful when you're outside, checking yourself. If you get a tick on you, it's not a problem if you get it off before it gets to biting you. And usually it takes a while before they do that. And spraying yourself with some sort of preventive spray when you go outside can help as well. Tucking your pants in, your socks, and those type of things, because they'll come up your legs. Wearing a hat, and then checking yourself when you come in. We had a lot of problem with ticks when I lived in Africa, and you just had to develop a habit to prevent the bites.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say spray, is that standard bug spray or is that specific spray for ticks?
Those type of bug sprays, I like one that's got pyrethium in it. It's a natural insecticide. It's not toxic to you or to children to use. And it comes from a flower, actually. I found it in Africa and Kenya where I was, and we used a lot of that. And it's available in sprays here. There's other things as well, but you're always concerned about putting insect repellents on children. And pyrethium is a good choice because it's non-toxic. And use that. If you're going to be outside a lot, you can actually get liquid to wash your clothes in a pyrethium-based substance that impregnates your clothes, and it lasts for probably 10 or 15 washings before you need to do it again. So if you've got a lot of ticks, then this springtime is a bad time. You just got to be careful, and then, of course, do a tick check, and somebody needs to help you do that because they can be in your hair in the back of your head and other places. But you're getting ready to take a shower, just check in a mirror or get someone to check and make sure you don't have a tick on you.
Yeah, I'm already starting to scratch my head. Wondering. So with the record heat that we had, David, over the weekend, are there anything besides what appears obvious that we should do in this severe heat? I know hydration is important. If you start to feel extra fatigued, is that just the heat, or are you underhydrated, or can you overhydrate? What's the rule on that?
You're not going to overhydrate. And I was out over the weekend doing yard work, and I came in and drank a 24-ounce thing of liquid and went back out and worked well, came back in and drank another one. And you cannot overhydrate. And if you're not urinating frequently or if your urine is getting more yellow, that's a sign that you're not having enough fluids in. If you're thirsty, that's another sign. Get out of the heat, drink, and there's problems with heat, as you well know, and it can go everywhere from heat exhaustion to heat stroke, which can be deadly. And the more humid it is, the harder it is to sweat because the humidity prevents the evaporation of the sweat that you're putting out, and you don't cool as well. Mm-hmm. So take breaks, work during the morning and late evening when it's cooler. Drink plenty of fluids. Don't forget your sunscreen. And just don't overdo it because people can have significant problems with when the heat's bad and especially the humidity is high.
Yeah, David, do you know why restaurants and stores have the air conditioning like a meat locker in the summer?
Well, it probably attracts people to walk in the door, I suspect, and buy something.
you're probably right. And my last question about the sun and the heat is, are all sunscreens created equal, or at a certain SPF, is it not worth it anymore? Because I wear SPF 2 million, which is the equivalent of just staying indoors. But I have very sensitive skin. So is SPF 50, is anything over that just overkill and not necessary?
Yeah, actually 30, over 30, 30? You're probably not getting much more effect. But I usually wear 50 anyway, so the doctor's not practicing what he's preaching. And then you need to remember to keep putting it on. It only lasts 3 or 4 hours when you're out, and you make sure that you've covered all areas. You've done what I've done, I'm sure, Bill. You think you've covered, and you come in, here's a burnt spot on your arm where you didn't get any on, or on your face or something. So
and that hurts.
Yeah, and it needs to be regular. And there's sunscreen now and a lot of women's cosmetics and that type of thing, which makes it something you're doing routinely. You don't even have to think about it for them. For us guys, we just have to think to do it when we're outside. And it really, you know, too much sun ages your skin, gives you lots of wrinkles, gives you a risk for melanoma and other skin cancers. It has both short-term and long-term effects. And therefore, protection is well worth the effort. All sunscreens are not equal. I picked up an article just this weekend that looked at rating different sunscreens and how effective they were. And you can find that type of article online to give you guidance on which brand to buy. But I buy at least 30 and usually 50 when I'm buying it and using it just to get a little extra protection, whether it's really there or not.
Mm-hmm. David, I so appreciate you sharing this information. This is the time of year where we pay attention to it, obviously, and it's so helpful. Let me take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I think I brought up a sensitive subject talking about ticks. My sister Lynn just texted me and says, I'm never going outside again. David, I'm speaking to Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And David, I'm curious to find out what the update is on Title 10.
Yeah, this is in the news last week, and essentially the government is going to take about $70 million away from mainly Planned Parenthood, who is promoting abortion at the same time they're providing other services. And this was something that actually is in the regulation and was instituted by Ronald Reagan, tested in the courts. And the Supreme Court said, yes, that was fine to do that, that you could not use federal funds to promote abortion. But that never happened. A new administration came in, and there's a huge outcry from Planned Parenthood. This, you know, this is going to destroy health care for women, and nothing could be further from the truth, Bill, when you look at the statistics. Actually, the services provided by Planned Parenthood are dropping significantly. A 22% decrease in the number of patients served since 2006. Cancer screenings fallen by 66%, breast exams by 63%, and the list just goes on. And yet the money they're getting has gone up by 64% federal funding and 33% for Planned Parenthood. And they say, well, women don't get their services. You know how much money Planned Parenthood made last year over excess, over expenses? $70 million.
Wow.
So this, they could literally just pick up the tab for this and, you know, pay for what needs to be done. Abortion is not family planning, and Title X pays for family planning. And the government's saying if you're doing abortions, it has to be separate from your family planning work. And, of course, in Planned Parenthood clinics, they do the same thing in the same building. The other side of the coin is this money is not going to not go to women. It's going to go to community health centers. There's 20 times as many of those as Planned Parenthood clinics serving the poor across the country. They're going to put the money where they're going to get broader services and better help and not have abortions going on in the same building.
Mm-hmm. All right, David, let me shift to the young ones. I guess there is some hesitation that about consumers should maybe stop using over-the-counter teething products that contain benzocaine.
Yeah, benzocaine is a local anesthetic. You put it on skin or mucous membranes in your mouth, and it causes anesthesia. And there's a lot of substances being sold out there from baby Orajel, Cepacol, Chlorseptic, or base or gel. When kids are teething, mothers will get this stuff and gel or something and rub it on the child's teeth. The problem are the gums. The trouble is that this causes methemoglobinemia. That's a big word, but essentially, you know, the word hemoglobin. What happens, it makes the hemoglobin, your red blood cells, unable to bind oxygen. And so this can be fatal for young children. They may get gray or blue-colored skin, lips and nail beds, shortness of breath, fatigue, headache, rapid heart rate, and literally can die from this stuff. And it's available in stores across the country. So the FDA has come out and said, no more. You either stop selling this or we're going to penalize you for it. And taking it off the shelves across the country. If you've got some in your house, make sure that it's not being used on babies or young children, because it can be deadly within minutes to 1 to 2 hours after using it.
Wow, that is scary stuff. All right, we just have a couple minutes left, David. What is the update on the California's physician-assisted suicide law?
Good news there. As we mentioned before, we sued the state of California saying that they had legalized physician-assisted suicide illegally during a special session of the legislature called by the governor for another purpose. And the Constitution says you can't do that. And judge ruled in our favor, and it was kind of a David and Goliath story. Mm-hmm. I was amazed when it happened. And since then, the 4th District Court of Appeal heard an appeal from the state and said, nope, it's unconstitutional. We're not going to stop it. So physician-assisted suicide is now illegal again in the state of California. They're probably going to take this to the state Supreme Court and then maybe back to the legislature. The battle's not over. But lives are being saved, and it's now illegal for some physician to help a patient kill themselves in that state again.
Well, thank you, David, so much for coming on the show. I always look forward to our conversations. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. God bless, Bill.
God bless you. It's 24 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with more. Good morning. It's 29 minutes after the hour, and God bless you this morning. God would be the subject, blessing would be the verb, and the person is the object, that'd be you. So God bless you this morning. We'll take a break for news, and then we're going to talk to Pastor Scott Sauls. Be back in a minute.
Ever hear these words before? Everyone else does it. Why can't I? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Your children will be surrounded by families with different boundaries and privileges. But don't cave to their standards. And when kids under your roof complain about your rules on cell phones, dating, and anything else, discuss why you made the rules you did. Communicate your beliefs and the purpose behind your expectations. Then I suggest every year you revisit those privileges. Slowly let the rope out and allow more responsibility for your child. Even though your rules aren't always popular with teens, stick to your guns, know why you enforce things, and communicate your expectations.
Be on the lookout for helpful new resources from Mark Gregston, specifically designed for moms and dads. They're coming soon to ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Welcome back to the show. My guest on our studio line is Scott Sauls. He's the senior pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville. He's also authored three books, Jesus Outside the Lines, Befriend, and From Weakness to Strength. He blogs weekly, and every time he blogs, we love it, and we love it when he's a guest on the show. And he's with us this morning. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Bill.
Always,
good to talk to you.
Always challenging to get the mouth to work in the morning for me. How about you?
Sure. Sometimes, yeah.
All right, let's talk about a blog you recently wrote, and we want to be right, and we're always outraged and offended, and that's got to stop. We got to nip that in the bud.
I agree. The Bible talks about how love is patient and kind, and one of the things listed in there in 1 Corinthians 13 is also that love is not easily offended. And I think the thinking goes that if the grace of God is true, and if Christ came to rescue us, not when we were at our best, but when we were at our worst, you know, if God demonstrated his own love and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, then having been the beneficiaries of that level of grace from our Creator. It seems like it would be harder to offend a Christian than it would be to offend somebody who doesn't have that understanding and experience of the grace of Christ. And so it seems to me that Christians should actually assume some kind of leadership role in the current cultural climate, where we become the people who surprisingly don't get easily offended and don't get easily defensive and so on, in all of the different conversations that are happening in the culture and on social media and so on.
Yeah, I love the verse. I was talking about it a few days ago. I think it's in 2 Timothy 2, where it talks about the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach and not resentful. It seems that in the world today, we're so easily triggered that we fly off the handle much faster than we should, and basically we shouldn't do it at all. But do we have the spirit, Scott, of just being gentle with people, not resentful, kind to everyone, not quarrelsome?
You know, I think there are examples that are there. Most of them don't make, you know, the broadcast news, or
right.
They don't show up as much in the viral, you know, articles that show up on the blogosphere and on social media. But, you know, I think that most of kind of quiet kindness and, you know, love your neighbor kind of stuff and you know, being willing to take a few insults and criticisms without striking back tends to happen more in kind of the quiet faithfulness of people's everyday lives. And so I think there's a lot of gentleness inside the family of God and among believers in Christ that just doesn't get publicized too much. And so what we're left with is sort of this public narrative of Christians really being no different than people who don't know Christ in terms of how we respond to, you know, the different, you know, sort of, I guess, heated disagreements that exist in the culture. And, you know, there are plenty of examples as well of us as believers responding in ways that make things worse instead of better and sort of getting sucked into this culture of outrage that we're in, which is unfortunate when it happens.
Yeah, Scott, what about when some people see conflict kind of as a sport, kind of what they like to do? And how do we, you know, kind of condition our hearts to want to be to want peace more than conflict?
Well, I think it goes back again to considering who we are before God. We are completely undeserving of validation. We're completely undeserving of a pat on the back and of being told that we are right and that we are righteous. We're completely undeserving.
Mm-hmm.
We belong to Jesus Christ because of grace and only because of grace, because of his generosity. He did not give us justice. He did not give us what we deserved. He gave us mercy. And, you know, I think the Apostle Paul is a terrific example that as you track his progress chronologically, as he writes his letters early on, he refers to himself as Paul, an apostle. Later, he calls himself Paul, the least of the apostles. Later on, the least of the saints. And at the end of his ministry, as he's preparing to die, you know, one of his, you know, last recorded letters is written to Timothy, and he calls himself the chief of sinners. And,
mm-hmm.
and so what we see is that the more virtuous and godly Paul becomes, the more humble he becomes.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive, but you know, the closer we are to Christ, the further we're going to be from arrogance.
Yeah.
Further we're going to be from a combative spirit. I mean, it's right there in the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, you know, where it's set up in Luke 18, where it says that Jesus spoke a parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and looked down on others with contempt. And you don't have to be a Pharisee for that to be true of you. There's actually such thing as a grace Pharisee, where if I embrace the truths of the grace of God and the kindness of God, and I sense that you are a bit more stern than you ought to be, and then I pounce on you for that, then I'm participating in the very thing that I'm condemning, and that makes me a hypocrite too. And so everybody's susceptible, no matter where you're coming from, no matter what your point of view, everybody is susceptible to trusting in themselves that that they got it right, and looking down on others and treating others with some level of contempt. And Jesus really warns pretty sternly about that, that the ones who go home justified are the ones who look to God and say, have mercy on me, the sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, the Pharisee who's saying, you know, I fast twice a week, I give a tenth of all I get, I'm not like other sinners, I don't commit the sins that other people out there are committing. You know, we've got to be really, really careful if we start to think that on the basis of our behavior, or on the basis of the tribe we're a part of, or on the basis of how clean we've kept our noses for, you know, whatever number of years, that all of a sudden becomes our identity and our basis for saying that we're in the right. You know, as soon as we look to our own performance in comparison to other people, is the moment that we've taken a few steps away from Christ rather than toward him. Because, you know, the closer we are to Christ, the further we're going to be from arrogance and self-comparison and acting as if we're somehow superior and that we get it and others don't. That's just a very unChrist-like way to carry ourselves, I think.
Mm-hmm. Scott, let me take a break. Go ahead.
Sure. Go ahead.
Let me just take a break. When I come back, we'll continue our conversation. I'm speaking to Scott Saul, senior pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Scott Saul. He's the senior pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville. He's authored three books, Jesus Outside the Lines, Befriend, and From Weakness to Strength. He blogs regularly. I love having him on the show. Let's pick up where we last left off. You had this thought that I wanted you to continue.
Yes, about the posture that we're called to carry in the world.
Yes, exactly.
Really, I think it just boils down to kind of asking ourselves the question every morning, what is my reason for either, you know, feeling good about myself in the world or bad about myself in the world? And if my answer to that question is, well, I'm superior to others, or I'm inferior to others on the basis of this, that, or the other, rather than, you know, anchoring my well-being and my okayness and my identity in what God has declared over me as a child of his through Jesus Christ, clothed with the righteousness of Christ, loved completely on my best day as well as on my worst day. Because I'm a recipient of grace, you know, God is not giving me what I've earned. God is not giving me what I deserve. I do not have a resume. Nothing in my hands I bring. You know, simply to the cross I cling, as the hymn goes. And I think we get amnesia about that. Mm-hmm. I think that we get amnesia about the reason why we can say we're okay with God. It is not on the basis of our own performance and our own, you know, comparison to other people and mm-hmm. how right we are and how wrong we are. And by the way, humility, it's not only a virtue of living in the kingdom and a sign of the Holy Spirit in us, it's also a powerful resource for the witness of the gospel. You know, people respond to humility a lot more warmly and receptively than they do to somebody putting them in their place. I mean, how many people do you know who say that they fell in love with Jesus Christ because a Christian scolded them for the way that they live their lives? Or
right.
a group of Christians piled on to them in an internet mob about, you know, sexuality or politics or something else. Like, nobody. I mean, I've been a Christian for over 30 years and a pastor for, you know, almost 23, and I've never met a single person who has that story who said they fell in love with Christ because a Christian beat them in an argument.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know those people.
Right.
And maybe they exist somewhere, but I have never met one.
Yeah.
And I've met scores of people who would say that Christ rescued them through the love of Christians. And, you know, those are the quiet stories I was talking about at the beginning of the first segment, that there are people all over the world who are loving well and loving faithfully in their ordinary daily lives and the places where they live, work, and play.
Mm-hmm.
And people are coming into the kingdom through the humility and kindness of Christians, you know, who have set their hearts on not only being the best kinds of friends, but also being the best kinds of enemies. You know, Jesus said, love, he didn't just say, love your friends. He didn't say, just love people who like you and want to be like you.
Mm-hmm.
He says, love your enemies, and then you'll be children of your Father in heaven. And so somehow we've got to recover that in this climate. And I think it's a tremendous opportunity when everybody's throwing stones at each other in all directions. What would it look like for Christians to actually be that city on a hill and salt of the earth that stands out in the world, not beating the world at its own game, but just being a different, life-giving, love-driven minority, which was the case in the New Testament
mm-hmm.
days for certain.
So, Scott, is there a time to be offended?
Is there? Yeah, to be offended by my own sin. You know, if my response to reading the Bible is to scrutinize you more than it is to scrutinize myself,
then I'm reading
it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't go to the scriptures to give me ammunition to use against other people.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the scriptures to repent and believe and receive the grace of God. That's why I go there. And are there times where we get offended? Yes. You know, if a brother sins against you, go and tell him his faults. And, you know, your goal isn't to put him in his place. Jesus is very clear. Your goal is to win your brother over. And so there are times when offenses happen, but it seems like the weight is placed in the Bible on going directly toward people, to people that we are in community with. You know, in the local church and inside of Christ, you know, who have committed an offense, and to not do it through gossip, but to go directly, Jesus says, and privately, it's all there in Matthew 18, just between the two of you, and work it out. And if you can't work it out, bring two or three people with you to witness the conversation and see if you can all come to a consensus together. If that doesn't work, bring the person before the church and let the elders, you know, judge who's right and who's wrong and so on and go from there. But there's a process that Jesus gives inside the church. But then you see Paul in 1 Corinthians 5 where he's talking about, you know, sexuality and, you know, particularly sexual immorality in the church. And he says, I'm not at all suggesting that judgment be passed on sexually immoral people outside of the church. That's God's business. I mean, Paul explicitly gives a moral imperative to Christians to not pass any judgment on non-Christians, on people outside of Christianity for their personal ethics. And does that mean that we should never preach the gospel and hold up the beauty of the law of God before non-believing people? Absolutely not. But when the Bible talks about, you know, particularly, you know, confrontation over offenses, he's most often steering us toward Christians helping other Christians get back on the path of walking in line with the gospel. You see this with Peter and Paul, when Paul calls Peter out for, you know, for his, you know, exclusive behavior and withdrawing from the Gentiles. He does it there in Galatians 2, you know, there's so many other places, but I just don't think there is a whole lot of evidence that Christians are supposed to be, you know, reading their Bibles in order to get ammunition that they can aim and shoot at people who don't believe in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And we even need to be judicious with each other. You know, when it talks in Galatians 6 about confronting the transgressions of others, he says, if any of you is caught or stuck in a pattern of transgression, then you who are spiritual should restore them gently. And, you know, sometimes if somebody sort of commits a one-off sin or offense, you know, sometimes the answer is not to pile on to them, but to do what the Proverbs say, to cover over, to overlook a fault. You know, there's a difference between a single fault and a pattern of behavior that's incongruent with the truth. And so we've got to be really judicious on those things.
I got to get a longer show. That's the problem. So much good stuff, Scott. Thank you so much for coming on. We're a little bit out of time, but I would love to have you back soon because you're absolutely such a delight, and I learned so much when you come on. ScottSauls.com is his web address. Scott, thanks so much, and have a great day.
Anytime, Bill. Thanks.
Yep, you bet. Scott Sauls has been my guest. ScottSauls.com. You can check it out. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
If you've tried to lose weight in multiple ways and just can't stop thinking about food, there is hope. Dr. Rona Epstein has written the book Food Triggers: End Your Cravings, Eat Well, and Live Better. She says help begins by recognizing what triggers you.
We have to figure out what are we sensitive to and what foods do we need to put boundaries around and what help do we need for the physical foods that are triggering us. But then there's emotional triggers, things in the environment. There's a multitude of triggers. We really need help figuring out. Sometimes we don't even know that we're being triggered by sensitivity over the way that people speak to us or look at us. And maybe we have our feelings hurt and we don't realize that we're reaching for food because we're stressed or bored or lonely. So there's a whole range of things that we need to learn in overcoming this problem. The diets that we're using aren't working.
Hear more from Dr. Rona Epstein at MyFaithRadio.com.
It is 5 minutes until the top of the hour. I just want to thank Scott Sauls, my guest. What a great reminder we need to be not offensive and be offended so easily because Jesus, God showed his love for us that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. And that's Romans 5:8. So while we were running from him, while we were passively resisting him, while we were actively opposing him, while we were his enemies, Christ in love gave his life for us. And we all have problems with people in our lives. We all have people that we need to forgive, people that we need to pray for, especially people that we struggle with. We can start taking that person to God in prayer and saying, I need this relationship to get better. I need to forgive that person in my heart, and I need to make the next step of faith, take the next step of faith, because, you know, we need to be slow to take offense, and we need to just let the little things just be little things, and because everyone's going to have their own taste. Everyone's going to have their own preference, and some of the little things we just need to let go of. And just be slow to take offense and to forgive one another as God has forgiven us in Christ. A good reminder to be slow to anger and quick to forgive, because we have a tendency of being quick to anger and slow to forgive. And God says, no, I just want you to do the opposite. I want you to be slow to anger, because we have so many things in life that seem to upset us and to trigger us and to set us off. And we have a tendency of just not showing our Christian love, even if it's in our head. You know, if someone beats you to a parking spot and you just want to take them out, that just, something ain't right if that's how you feel. Because we have to reserve our anger in life for things that matter. And I don't think things like that really matter that much. But I just want to say thanks to Scott for reminding us that we need to be slow to anger and quick to forgive, just the way Scripture teaches. I just want to thank Dick Whitworth, too, and Neil Stavem, who are making announcements as early as today that, you know, Susie Larson is moving on. And it looks like as a team player, I'll be making the shift to afternoons. So I'm absolutely delighted to be doing that. But boy, will I miss you in the morning. Have a great day. I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.